Is everyone ready? All right. I would now like to introduce Shelley from Vista. Yay! All right.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Shelley, alcoholic. I wasn't ready, so just kidding. Anyway, so again, Shelley, alcoholic from Vista. It is a pleasure to be here. There's so many things I want to say. I want to start off and giving a shout out to all the North County people who came down, Boston Bob, holla, and welcome to all those who are new or in those who I didn't identify as new either, because sometimes it's really hard to raise your hand and say, hey, I got a problem. Trust me, I know all about that. We're going to get the rigmarole out the way. So my sobriety date's October 30th, 1993. I have a sponsor. Her name's Freddie. She lives in Florida. She just moved there fairly recently. She calls me out on my and she keeps me honest and straight, which is what I need in this program because I'm a liar, cheat, and a thief at heart. So I have excuses for everything. And it's never my fault, right? It's always someone else's fault. It's never my fault. So let's get into it. So it was funny today. I was driving. I always like to start off with some stories. I was driving with a gal who's a normie. And she's like, wow. She's like, what are you doing tonight? I'm like, well, I'm going to speak in a meeting. She knows I'm sober. I mean, I don't advertise it, but I do tell people. And she's like, 31 years. 31 years of doing anything's a long time. I'm like, no kidding. I mean, I had some other words, but I'm like, no kidding. But I didn't come here, to be here for 31 years. That wasn't the original intent when I walked in the door. But we were talking. She's like, wow. Like, how do you know? How do you know you're alcoholic? I'm like, I said, look, I don't react to things the way that you do. And she's like, well, what do you mean? And I'm like, we were talking about letting things go. And she's like, when you're upset about something, letting things go. And I'm like, I hang on to it till the death. Like, if I'm PO'd about something, I said, when did you learn how to just let things go? She's like, oh, I learned about it when I was young and I just grasped onto that concept. I'm like, that is not my concept. Okay. So, there was just some other things we chatted about is it normal to have a beer bong by yourself? Bong 6 years. She's like, wow. I'm like, yeah, well, you guys will hear all about it anyway. So I grew up here in San Diego, till I was 12. I grew up with a normal family. I mean, as normal as they come, everyone's got some dysfunction junction going on. And then my parents, here's my first resentment. We got moved to Minnesota when I was 12, and hollered to South Dakota. But it's cold. It was very cold. And I did not blend, a Southern California girl. I thought, oh, I'm going to be the cool kid. I'm from California. No. I was not a cool kid at all. Actually, I was a dork. Didn't know that. But it was, and I didn't fit in. And I mean, and that tended to be the case wherever I was, whether I was in San Diego or wherever I was, that was the inside of me, is I didn't belong. I never belonged anywhere. So we'll move forward right along. I was a normal drinker once. And when I say once, I literally mean one time. And I was 15. My mom's from England, so we were over there visiting with the relatives, and I got taken out with some people to the bar, and I had two baby shams, and I lied about what we were doing and whatever, but it didn't really faze me at all. But that was my one time being a normal drinker. So I was an awkward kid in high school, and my drinking career is short-lived, but I will qualify, and you'll enjoy the qualification. But I'm not going to live too long in the qualification because there's so much more to life after that, right, and in sobriety. So, at 17, I used other substances before I drank just because they were easier to get in school. I got it from my brother. Something smart alecky just went through my brain. I'm not going to say it about my brother. Still have a little resentment with him. Sorry, God will kick in at some point here. So, but I was pretty much a dork in high school. And then I finally found the alternative kids, right? And I loved alternative stuff. And so, quickly I started partying a lot. And my goal was to party every night as much as I could, as often as I could. I'd party in abandoned houses in Minneapolis. Every Sunday night there was an all ages thing, and we'd go into the parking garage, and we'd always have stuff with us, whether it's alcohol or other stuff, right? I just, you know how you have flashbacks when you're talking, you're like, oh yeah, I did that. Yeah, I'm glad they didn't have as many video cameras back then as they do now in the parking garages, because we would have been called out. But, you know, I drank, I didn't see anything wrong with my drinking, right? 17, 18, like this is what you do when you're a kid, you party. And, but I partied every night as much as I could. But I can on the outside, I was that girl. I looked good on the outside. I had good grades, and that's what my parents cared about. But my insides were slowly dying, right? They were slowly dying. And so I ended up going to college. It was either San Diego State or University of Minnesota. And I had a friend, one of my good friends, was going to the University of Minnesota, so I decided to go there. And that's when my drinking career really took off. Within 2 years, let's see, I was 19. And you know, you have moments of clarity. So I was 18. Well, I was 18. I was living in the dorm. And I remember looking at my dorm room, and I'm like, huh. My whole wall was lined with Bacardi bottles. Okay, now other girls had cute little trinkets, pictures of their families, pictures of the boyfriend. Mine was all Bacardi bottles. That was it, Bacardi bottles. And, you know, you stop and think, maybe there's something wrong with my drinking. And it's like, no, I'm good. This, you know, I'm in college. This is what you do. And you can't be an alcoholic unless you're 21, right? I mean, it's not legal. Again, I can rationalize just about anything. Still true today, people, true story. So, you know, and so, you know, in the meantime, I had gone on and off to see therapists, and, you know, I was on antidepressants, and the doctor's like, so how much do you drink? I'm like, once a week. Lie. And he's like, well, you shouldn't drink on these. I'm like, no problem. That helped me bring me down faster. But anyway, so at 19, I went in, my therapist is like, well, you know, I am a little concerned about your drinking. And I'm like, okay. She's like, well, how about we do an alcohol assessment? I'm like, okay. And let's just say that was the last time I saw that therapist after I had my alcohol assessment, because she said, you have tendencies to drinking. And I thought, thank you, I don't. I'm just fine. And who are you to judge, lady? So that was the end of seeing her. But, you know, you have moments of clarity. Like, I was a drinker and driver. Like, it, all the time. Like, but by the grace of God, I didn't hurt anyone. That's all I can say, because I should have. Because it was every night I drank and drove. I didn't drive every night, but because I was in a dorm. But I drank and drove a lot. And I was a blackout drinker. And I didn't know that, like, blacking out was a problem. I thought everyone blacked out. Like, I remember being at a party, and I'm talking to someone. And this guy's like, dude, I got to slow down. I'm feeling good. I'm like, why would you slow down? Like, that's, you know, you just get started. Like, that's when you just get going. Like, I didn't understand the concept of you just have a couple beer. No. Again, before I'd even, this is a typical night of drinking, is I would bong 6 beers before I'd even walk out to the party by myself. I had my own beer bong in college, and I had no problem with it. And I was a very classy drinker. I had to drink Special Export. Why? I couldn't tell you, but that was what I liked. So, I mean, you know, but I would be, I was willing to do anything to get what I needed to get. Like, and I had to know, you know, the alcoholic brain, it's, and I didn't know this, by the way, it runs in my family. Like, it was a quiet, hush-hush secret in my family that my mom was an alcoholic. But my whole world revolved around, when am I going to get my next drink? When am I going to get my next, I don't want to feel like I do? Because this is me without alcohol. But alcohol does this. It makes me breathe, and it calms my head down, because my head goes a million miles an hour, and I'm thinking, what are you thinking about me? Why am I thinking about me? What are you thinking about me? Why are they staring at me? What are they thinking about me? And why, what am I going to do for the rest of my life? I mean, my head goes. And so again, you know, it's just typical. So by the time I'm, you know, my friends change. Like, every 6 months I had a friendship group change. So it was alternative. It was rap girl. It was deadhead. And then a sorority girl. And, you know, you just, I burned through friendships. That's what it was. It wasn't because I was a good person or I really was into the whatever, the culture. It was, I burned through the friendships and I needed somewhere else to go. So, you know, and again, you can't be an alcoholic unless you're 21, just saying. So let me get my brain back on track. I caused a lot of damage drinking. By this time, my parents had moved out of, my mom had moved back to California. My dad moved to Pennsylvania. And, you know, they didn't necessarily see me, but they knew their daughter wasn't who they thought she should be. But again, on the outside, I can present really well. Like, I got the whole MO. I'm getting good grades in college. I made the dean's list the first year. And it's like, I got it. I'm good. But the insides of me were dying. I was full of loneliness and fear. And alcoholism was a very, very dark place. I mean, I had a high bottom, if they call it a high bottom. But at 19, I was drunk driving once again. And this is like seconds and inches. And I'm at a gas station. I got to pick up my smokes because I needed smokes. And I pulled ahead, and there was a soda machine, and I hit a soda machine and drove away. And I knew I was in trouble for that because, you know, I turned myself into the cops the next day. Were you drinking? Were you driving? No. And so I went, but I knew I had a problem. So I went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was on the campus of University of Minnesota. And I walked in the room. I looked around. I'm like, thank you very much. I'm going to judge you all and walk out the room and think I'm just fine. So then I decided I was going to try, and by this time I was in a sorority, and thought I was going to try some normal drinking, and which again, we all know how normal drinking works for me. I didn't even last a week. And again, I found the girls in the sorority who like to party like I party, and it got very dark. I mean, alcohol, I ended up in the hospital. I was suicidal and ended up in the hospital. But again, drinking was not my problem. Remember, that was my solution. Like, that's the only time that I felt good about my insides, and that I could breathe and I could talk to you and actually participate in the human race, really. But when you are going to bed at 5 a.m. and waking up at 5 p.m. and you are supposed to be a full-time student, that doesn't go very well because you don't participate in class and get good grades. But, you know, and again, you can't be an alcoholic by the time before you're 21. Anyway, so 21st birthday rolls around, and, you know, my drinking just kept going. And again, this is just another typical night of drinking for me. This is my last episode. We started off at the sorority, ended up at Mississippi Live, and it was quarter bottle night. I mean, that is a dream for an alcoholic, a quarter bottle. So here's your $2. Give me four beers, and there's your dollar tip. Good. So that starts it off. And we get back to sorority. I'm wasted as usual. And all my friends, you're going to spend the night here, right? Yep, sure am. Of course I'm not. Like, within 2 minutes, my brain tells me, you need to go home. Just go drive home. You're fine. You're fine. Oh, and by the way, if you were with me, you happened to be a casualty, because when I said I was going to go, I gave you about a 2-second warning that I was going to go. Because when I wanted to go, I wanted to go. And if you were with me, you took a chance, because you never know if you're going to come back with me or not. That's how I rolled. Anyway, so it was quarter bottle night. Again, just another night of getting blasted. I remember, you know, barely driving home, and, you know, the old tricks of rolling down the window, one eye, you know. And I stopped at this place in Minnesota called Perkins. It was like Coco's, right? And I remember briefly being in there. And back then they had, ready? Didn't have cell phones. We had pay phones. And let me tell you how embarrassing it is, because it's not like you can go through your cell phone the next day and know who you pissed off. You never know who you pissed off, because you're at a payphone and you have no record of who you called. And I was that girl. I was a drunk dialy girl at all hours of the night. So anyway, I barely remember making it home, and I woke up the next morning and it was like, this, you know, this is another God moment. Another night of this. I can't do this anymore. I can't do this again. Hungover, I had a softball-sized bruise on my arm, had no idea where I got it from. There were cheesy hash browns all over the front of my car, and when I mean all over the front of my car, I mean everywhere, from Perkins. My stepbrother at the time was angry with me because apparently I had called him, and he was out looking for me at like 2 in the morning, and I decided, I picked up the phone and I called my mother, and I said, Mom, and this is God, because I normally don't call my mom, okay, for this type of stuff. I said, Mom, I think I have a problem. And she said, well, it's about time, honey. We knew you had a problem. And I'm like, oh, shit. Oops, sorry, I said the S word. But I'm like, oh, no. And what do you mean? Like, you know, it's not what you want to hear. Like, when you want to hear, oh, honey, you're fine. You just had a rough night drinking. No. It was like, we've been waiting for this call. We've been waiting for you. Like, they knew, because, you know, even when I was younger, I would cause chaos at Christmas, and, you know, it wasn't always a happy, fun time. I mean, because I wanted to drink. I didn't want to be around family. I had things to do. I needed to get my stuff on. Anyway, so she's like, do you happen to know anyone in AA or anyone who doesn't drink? And I said, well, there's a girl in the sorority house who doesn't drink. And she's like, well, why don't you call her? Because my mom knew she couldn't help me. My mom's one of us. She's not in the program. I don't care. I'll take her dry. She talks about AA, and I don't care. Like, I'll take her. It's better than her using. And so I picked up the phone, and I called this girl, Michelle. And, you know, I'm that girl. I had, by the way, the six-pack purse in college where I'd go to the fraternities, and I'd have a six-pack, you know, and I'd put all the beers in, and, you know, as I go, because I would need it extra for later. And I would offer Michelle beer, and she's like, no, I'm good, thanks. I'm like, that's how sensitive I was. I knew she didn't drink, but I'm like, you want a beer? And she's like, great. She's like, I've been sober 4 years. She got sober very young at 16. And she took me to my second meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was a small group of women. Her mother was in the meeting, and it was a great group of women. It was about 12 women. And I went there once a week for about a year and a half. And they were talking, I would say they're doing the best job they could. They talked about what they thought the steps were of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I had some type of idea of what AA was. But in that first year, I mean, I'm still going to the bars. I'm still going dancing. I was a dart league. I mean, I was things to do. And AA was not on the top of the priority list, okay? So let me tell you, me without alcohol is like this. I am uptight, and I am not a happy individual. Sometimes I still get that way in sobriety, too. That's if I'm not working a program. So about a year and a half sober, I started to get really miserable. Like, I had untreated alcoholism, and I didn't know what that was. And I'm thinking, I got to go check into treatment. Like, my head, like, is, I'm going crazy. I am going crazy because I had no solution. I had no solution to my alcoholism and my thoughts and anything. And so it was 1995, and again, this is how God works for me. The International Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous was in San Diego, for those of you who have been around. 95, right. And my mom had moved back out to San Diego, and she knew I was going nuts, by the way, because I had worked step one, and I was powerless over alcohol, period. Came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Okay, I can buy that. And then made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as we understood him. And his name was Mike. And Mike didn't sign up to be my God, and Mike quickly left, and I fell apart. Because, you know, when you put your emotional dependency on someone, they tend not to enjoy it if they didn't sign up and ask for it. So I fell apart, and it would just happen to be the International Convention of 1995. My mom's like, honey, like, just come out. Like, come out. Oh, by the way, there happens to be the AA International Convention going on here. Maybe we should go down and check it out. I'm like, okay, I'm game. Got a round-trip ticket for $99, and we went down to the International with my mother and her boyfriend and people. And by the way, my mom's fiancé or boyfriend, whatever you want to call him, they've been together 40 years. He had been sober in AA for 20 years, and he was always a very calm, kind, loving example to me of what Alcoholics Anonymous was, right? So you never know where you plant the seed. He never pushed AA on me. He never, like, said anything to me about my drinking. He was always an example. So we went to the International Convention, and people were really happy. And, like, my idea of AA was 12 women in a room talking about what they thought the steps were. I mean, people were dancing. Not well, but they were dancing, okay? And they were having fun. They were happy, joyous, and free. And that, I was like, oh, my God. I didn't know that this existed. And so I was outside having a smoke on the corner, and there were two guys from Minneapolis walking by, and they're like, oh, hey, Minneapolis. I'm like, yeah, Minneapolis. Hey, hey, hey. They're like, oh, hey, you should come check out our meeting sometime. I'm like, okay. And, you know, I remembered their names, and I remembered the meeting, and they went off on their merry way, and I'm like, well, they're kind of cute. Maybe I should go check out their meeting. Good motives, right? So, you know, I went back to Minneapolis after that, and I waited two long weeks before I got good and miserable and was willing to do something different. And I remembered the meeting, and it was a Sunday night meeting, and I went there, and they got me connected with women who were working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, that's how God works. The second and inches part, like, happened to be on the same street corner. Round trip ticket for $99. Girl in the sorority who, you know, I mean, I wouldn't have been sober that first year if she hadn't been there. I mean, God does for me what I cannot do for myself. And I don't always understand why it's going on, and I can fight it tooth and nail, but I have to trust there's a plan. So I went back to Minneapolis, and they hooked me up with women who were working the steps out of the Big Book. I had a woman, I got her to be my sponsor. And I mean, they went bowling sober. They were actually having fun sober. I'm like, I didn't know you could have fun sober. Didn't think it was fun. I still can't dance sober. I mean, let's not lie about that. It's not attractive. I'm Elaine from Seinfeld. So anyway, so, but they were hooking me, they hooked me up with women who were working the steps out of the Big Book. And reading it line by line with another woman is one of the most powerful things there is, because that's where I learned about the disease of alcoholism, that I am spiritually, mentally, and physically different from other people. I didn't understand that I had an allergy. I don't react to alcohol the way other people do. Other people like, oh, I got a buzz, I need to settle down. What? Like, me is more's better. I need to feel different. I crave alcohol. I didn't understand that people who didn't crave it and didn't have the feelings, and they didn't understand, it explained my loneliness and the separation I have from this, you know, a spiritual sickness. I have a spiritual sickness. I can still get it today. I've had it at 20 years of sobriety, where I could not connect with people in the rooms of AA because I was spiritually sick. God bless Jen Morton for, where is she? Where are you? She tolerated me for a long time of it. Anyway, so I was working the steps of the Big Book, and I, you know, it talks about it in the steps, you know, admitted to God, to ourself, the exact nature of my wrong. My first four step and fifth step, God bless my sponsor. It was like 8 hours, and it was painful for her. But freeing for me, because the next day I remember it was the first time I saw the sunrise, and I'm like, I feel connected to the earth, right? And I walked, instead of walking into a meeting and looking for the differences, I felt love for everyone in the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. That changed me. And I became one of you guys. And I felt love for people in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, six and seven, trust me, we'll keep talking about those later. You know, making amends, like looking at your amends. I mean, I literally, in downtown Minneapolis, I remembered saw someone that I needed to make an amend to, and I walked away. I walked the other side of the street. And, you know, and after looking and praying, I called her up, and, you know, again, God does for me what I can't do for myself. So I called my sponsor's like, it's time for you to make amends, lady. Chop, chop. I'm like, So I'm like, fine, I'll call this girl, and I'll call her parents to see if I can get her number. So I call her up. I'm like, hi, Ms. Fields, you probably don't remember me. It's Shelly. She said, oh, hi, Shelly. Yeah, I said, I'm trying to locate Amy. Oh, well, she's right here. Phone. I was like, I wasn't ready for that. I wasn't ready to make an amend, but God does for me what I can't do for myself. And I got to make face-to-face amends with her because I had harmed her a lot. She tried to support me when I was trying to sober up when I was 19. And, you know, she worried about me a lot. I mean, we went on a trip to Europe together, and I'm the girl that just takes off in downtown. Where was it? Were we in Amsterdam? Like, I'm like by myself, like, bye, I'm gone. I don't like what's going on here. I'm out. And, you know, I caused a lot of damage. The last time I saw my grandfather, I was wasted, and I have regrets about that. You know, I also, one of my roommates, when I was suicidal at the time, this is the damage we do and we don't think about, is I was suicidal, and I took a whole bottle of pills, and she knew I was trying to commit suicide. And her father had committed suicide about 3 years earlier. So I had to go back and make amends for that. And, you know, she's like, to go back and sit down and go, I was wrong, I hurt you. And I hurt you badly. And I was selfish at the time with that. And this is what happened. And I'm trying to do better. What can I do to make it right? That's a hard pill to swallow. But I will never take back making amends to her, because I get to look her in the eye today, you know? I get to be free and clear. And I get to not do that to other people. That's the biggest amend, is I get to not hurt other people in the future, because I get to remember the damage I did cause. 10, 11, and 12, we'll keep talking about that. Anyway, so AA's done a lot for me. So let's see. At 7 years, I love my dad. I'm a dad's girl. He was in Pennsylvania. He got remarried. He had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And God, again, put me in the right spot at the right time. I was in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I knew he had some back issues. So I thought, oh, something's not right. I better go. I kind of feel like I need to make a phone call. And so at the end of the meeting, I stepped outside and made a phone call, and I found out that they were taking him by ambulance to the hospital. And I fell to my knees, and the Women of Alcoholics Anonymous took me to the airport and got me on a plane and sent me off to go see him. And that's when I realized, you know, we die. Apparently I've been very sheltered for a long time. But, you know, he went through chemo and I got to show up and be a daughter. But, you know, yeah, my head is crazy still. You know, I'm trying to bargain with God. If I do this, then please save my dad. And, you know, I'm a very slow learner in Alcoholics Anonymous, by the way. I don't do anything easy. When someone told me at 25 years to drop the rock, I'm like, I'm going to kill you. If I knew how to drop the rock, I would have. I mean, so I'm really a calm individual. But I'm a very slow learner in AA. Like, things don't come very easily to me. So at 7 years, that happened. Oh, I should go back and then say, so at 2 years, I got the opportunity to see where I came from and what type of alcoholism I come from. Is, again, my mom's from a small town. Her parents are grandparents, or my grandparents are from a small town in Wales. We own the local inn/pub. And my aunt, who I loved very, very much, and she was a sweet woman. She was always vibrant and loving and kind. She's an alcoholic. I got to watch her really toward the end of her alcoholism. We went upstairs and tried to 12-step her for about 2 hours. And after 2 hours, we saw her sneak downstairs to pour herself a tall one. And shortly afterwards, she passed away. And that's when I learned that alcoholism plays for keeps. You know, this is what it looks like to me. This is what my life will be like if I go back out drinking. And it was sad. I mean, you know, we talked to her about AA. We talked to her about all sorts of stuff. And just, oh, okay. I mean, her brain was pretty mushy at that point. But I do come from a long, great line of alcoholics. I have another, not that long ago, a cousin. It was her daughter, who was so wasted that she had a fire in the fireplace, and she was so drunk that she fell into the fire, into the ashes, smoldering ashes, and didn't wake up from that. So she was in the hospital for a long time trying to heal. But that's what my alcoholism looks like, right? So if I kept going, like, I still today, I know without a doubt that if I pick up a drink again, I'm gone. Like, that's how I roll. I don't, there's no half measures for me when I'm drinking. I'm an all or nothing girl, and I'm going down in, well, I shouldn't say literally in flames, that's a really bad joke, but I'm going down, you know, that didn't come out right, but I'm going down, right? So anyway, so there's that. Sorry, that came out all wrong. Please ignore the last statement. Ugh. So 7 years. And then at 12 years, I had the opportunity to move. You know, again, God does for me what I can't do for myself. My brother gets married in the middle of France. He met a French girl, and there was a guy there, and he had a job opportunity out in California. And I always knew I wanted to end up back here. I just wasn't happy in Minnesota. There's great people, and the AA out there is top notch. Like, the AA I went to was, you go to 3 meetings a week, you do the deal, you're sponsored, you sponsor other women, you're active in service, you are in the middle. They don't let you not get in the middle. And I was scared, because at 12 years, I was still really integrated in AA. But I knew that I knew in my heart that God wanted me somewhere else. So at 12 years, sold my townhouse and quit the job that I had had for years. And but I also wanted to be by my family. And so I came back out here to California, and it was hard, because you, once you're ingrained and you have your people, like, you're my people. Like, and then to move from that, it was really hard. It was really scary. I was new all over again, which means I had to go to meetings. I had to sign up for a commitment. I had to get active again, and I had to put myself out there. I mean, thank God, Jen. I had met Jen. I'd been going to the International for a while. I met Jen in Toronto in 2005. And she had come to Minneapolis a couple times. So thank God, she was my main connect here. And she, if you don't know Jen, she loves Alcoholics Anonymous like no one else. And she's passionate about it. And I just strive to have that much that she has. So I love her to death. And anyway, so I was new here, and she took me by the wing, and I got sponsored here, and I got active here. And it took me a little while, like, because of course I'm a judger here. I'm like, you're not doing it right. You're not doing it right. It's not the way we do it in Minneapolis. What's up? So, you know, it's like, oh, but guess what? It works just because you're not doing it your way. It's not BK. It's not Burger King. You can't have it your way all the time, Shelley. Anyway, so, you know, but it took me about 2 years. And then, you know, once I finally got connected and hooked in, I'm like, these are my people. I love these people. Like, these people saved my butt. We are so lucky that we can go anywhere in the world, literally in the world, and walk in and be amongst our people. Like, we are so lucky we have that. Because I know when people move here and they don't have AA, they're like, okay, how do I get hooked in? Where do I go to meet people? And I'm like, I got my people. You talk the language of the heart. You share what I share. But it takes a little while. You have to extend yourself. It's like, just because you have time doesn't mean you have your together. It means, you know, you still have life struggles. Life still happens. Then 3 years after that, I got laid off, and I thought I was going to have to move back to Minneapolis. I thought I was going to cry because I had to move back to Minneapolis. That was a joke, but I did not want to go back, but I thought, I don't know what to do, and AA just picked me up, and again, it's the tools that I've learned here, and it's all those stupid things that I thought were stupid. Think, one day at a time, and I'm like, it literally is one day at a time. Like, it literally is sometimes 1 second at a time to get through. Sometimes that's what happens. So fortunately, I got a job here. I had to make some sacrifices. I had to adjust lifestyle, but you do what you have to do. And then a couple years after that, my brother and his wife got pregnant. And again, God does for me what I can't do for myself, because I do not want to be in that room when they're giving birth. I'm just telling you that. I don't do blood well. So it turned out that my mom, Shelley, Celine's in labor. I have strep throat, so I need you to step in for me. Okay. I'm the girl that passes out when I have to get blood. So I'm like, okay, but, you know, and so it comes time after about 8 hours. I was in there to calm her down and be a service, right? Like, you guys have taught me to be a service, not just in the rooms of AA, but outside the rooms of AA. So I was holding her hand. I'm like, Celine, look in my eyes. You got this. I mean, the doctor came with the epidural, and I almost pooped my pants. It was huge. So I'm like, look in my eyes. We got this. You know, I'm just cheering her on. We're getting through it. And then that worked. And then it came time for the birth. I'm like, okay, I'll be outside. They're like, no. We want you here. Like, we need your help. I'm like, okay, because that's what AA has taught me, is just to say okay. Like, show up when you're asked. So I was there for the birth of my nephew, and I have a connection with that kid like no other. He is the love and joy of my life. There isn't anything I wouldn't do for that kid, except I wouldn't drink or use that. I won't do that. But, you know, he knows that he's got a safe place to come to, you know, and he's in high school now. So guess what? He confided in me that he has started smoking pot, and, you know, he knows I'm sober. So, you know, all I can do is be an example to him. And say, kiddo, just watch out. It runs in the family. Like, you're going to go do you, and I love you no matter what, and you've got a safe place. You can come to me anytime you need me. I love you. That's it. God, there's been so much in AA. Let's see. I know I have so much more to carry, but all of a sudden my mind just went, phew. I know. So I have my nephew, and I love that kid more than anything. Then COVID hit. Okay, so how do we do COVID in AA? Like, missing the rooms, right? Like, within no time, though, like, AA just picks up itself by the bootstrap. And here we are, we're doing meetings online. And I'm like, how's this going to work? Worked just fine. We still managed to carry the language of the heart. And that, to me, is amazing. I kind of miss the old days of 12-step calls. We don't really do those anymore. The old school AA. I mean, I'm pretty old school with it. Like, I'm a firm believer in doing, you know, reading one-on-one with out of the big book. Like, that's, to me, like, I don't want to water down the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, again, if you don't know the history of AA, it is freaking cool. Like, it is amazing where we came from and the lessons we learned from the previous groups that failed. It's amazing to me. The Washingtonians, I mean, everything. The history of AA is amazing. About 20 years, I just lost my spiritual connection with God. Like, and I got really mad at God, really mad. I don't know if I was looking to get mad at God. I couldn't tell you why, but I was so angry sitting in the room. So, like, just because you have time does not necessarily mean you're spiritually well-being, right? Like, time is. I'll never regret, like, I love and cherish my sobriety date, but it doesn't mean that I still can't get sick in the rooms. And I was mad. I was mad for a while. And, you know, God bless the women and the old, oh, Lily, where are you? I lost you, but happy birthday. 45 years, thanks for trailblazing. for us. I mean, you know, I need the people who have come before me to show me still how it gets done. Because there's times I don't know how to get through things. I just don't know how to get through things. I stumble and I fail. Like the whole thing with my nephew smoking pot, I went to people who were parents in the room and I'm like, how are you guys, how do you handle this? You know, and they're telling me how they're handling it. Because I mean, my instant reaction is mama bear with him. I'm like, I'm going to kill my brother. I'm going to kill him. Because my brother's the one who's helping him get stoned, by the way. So yeah, I have a tough relationship. I mean, not all family relationships heal too. Like I care about my brother, but we're never going to be best friends. But today I can accept that and be okay with that. Like my family still has a lot of dysfunction junction going on, but I, you know, work with my sponsor and she sets me on the right path, what I get to choose to participate in and what I don't. My mom the other day, oh my God, I don't know why family can still push buttons like nobody's business. She's like, you need to calm down and take a breath. And I'm like, oh, hell no, did she just say that to me? She did not just tell me to calm down, okay? Like, my mom, she can get a little uptight. So I had to, like, you know, my instant response is text, 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 text. Is it kind? Is it loving? Is it thoughtful? Nope. Delete, 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 delete. Call my sponsor, Freddie, blah, 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 blah. And then she says something and I say, yeah, but, and she says, there's no buts. There's no buts, honey. And that's what I need to hear because I need to be called out on my stuff. What's your part in it, Shelly? I got a big part. Like, number one, I probably shouldn't have said what I said to her. Bottom line. But I at least got to, instead, I got to tell her, I got to calmly say, we had a conversation, Mom, there was something you said last time that really upset me. Can we please talk about it? Who is this person? It's not me. I don't react like this. My reaction's like, I'm coming at you with guns blazing. So it was like, she's like, okay, so, you know, we had a nice 5-minute conversation. She's like, you wanted to talk about something? I'm like, yes, I just wanted to let you know. It upset me when you said this. Who is this person talking? It's not me. And we ended up having a really good, like, adult conversation. Like, I get to adult today. Like, not all the time. Trust me, I can still slip back into unadulting. And there's times I don't really like to adult. But, you know, life is good. So COVID hit. AA still picked up by its own 2 feet, which is amazing to me that we were able to get by. And I mean, it's kind of sad. You look through those books and you see where COVID started and then where it ended, where people got to come back in person. And I remember there was a couple rebels out there having AA meetings at their home. And I was actually really grateful for it because I missed the power of the prayer at the end. To say the serenity prayer all together to meet in person and not have that God grant, God grant, God grant, this, you know, the everyone talking over everyone was very peaceful and freeing to me. I had to, you know, we can get through anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've watched people walk through some of the best times in their life, but also some of the worst times in their life. I mean, I haven't yet lost my parents. There are people in here I've watched walk through that. And I know I'm going to have a tremendously hard time. My father moved in. He retired and moved in with me. And that has been a challenge because I am an introvert. And I like things done my way. So it's been a challenge, right? Like, there's times where I'm like, we have the heat set at 64. That is the limit in the house, okay? The limit, the lowest I am willing to go. It was at 63, like 2 weeks ago. My little passive-aggressive butt got herself into it again and wrote a note. I thought we discussed this. The lowest temperature was 64. So I posted that up, and I don't typically do that, but I was just ticked. I mean, I'm going through menopause, so I get hot flashes, and then I'm cold, and oh, it's just so much fun. And then he wrote a nice little note back and said, I didn't touch it. I'm like, you know, but then I had to go make amends. I said, you know what, Dad? I was wrong. Because if he said he didn't touch it, I need to believe him. And I need him to be honest. I said, you know, I was wrong. I shouldn't have assumed that you touched that. So sure enough, 2 days ago, where's the temperature at? 63 again. I'm like, God taught me, right? I had to go back and make things right, you know? I was telling people at dinner, I totally, and I told Francine this, I'm sorry. I totally got busted lying 2 weeks ago. Like, the old spiritually sick Shelly can come out. Like, and I'm not a good liar, and I've never been a good liar, ever. Like, you know, like we were talking about it tonight at dinner. Like, you build the lies upon, when you're using, you build the lies upon the stack of lies upon the stack of lies, and then someone pulls that one card out, and then you're like, hit, how do I make the, how can I lie about the lies that I've made about the lies? And I'm not even good at telling one lie now. I mean, it's pretty bad. So I had to, you know, I called myself on the carpet and I'm like, I lied. I'm like, I was wrong. I'm sorry. I lied to you about it. And she started laughing because, I mean, she's like, what was she going to say? I'm like, I just didn't want to spend the $30. I just don't want to spend $30. That's why I lied. But, you know, I still can get sick. I still can be spiritually not well. But, you know, I can tell you what God's done for me over, I mean, 31 years. If you would ask me, Shelly, like, did you think you'd still be here after 31 years? I never came here to get well. I mean, I never came here. But thank God I didn't leave before the miracle happened in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Like, I couldn't tell you when exactly it happened. I can tell you the small little God shots. But, again, like, I used to be a rearview mirror God. Like, I needed to see God in the past to see me working, which has helped me today. But today I actually have faith in the future. And that's where I know if I'm spiritually well, if I trust God for the future, that's where I know. I changed jobs within my company this year. And that's scary for me because I've been in this same kind of job for years, and I was good at what I was doing, and frankly I could do it in my sleep and I could do my job in an hour, but I feel like God kind of pointed me in another direction. And you know, I still can have fear disguised as it disguises itself. You know, it talks about that fear is the evil and corroding thread, and I'm like, oh my God, how dramatic is that? But it's true. You know, fear can disguise itself in all sorts of different ways and look at all sorts of different lights. Like, I can tell when I'm today, I can at least recognize it. Like, God's like, Shelly, fear. Like, you guys taught me that. Fear right here. Because if I start lashing out, it's fear. I'm like, I never thought it was fear. I thought I would have justifiable anger, which I was the queen of, by the way. I had justifiably anger. I could justify, again, I can still be a sick woman today and justify bad behavior to anyone. Watch me play pickleball. It's the paddle. It's the ball. It's the wind. It's the sun. I can come up with any excuse. But, you know, the bottom line is Shelly, you just didn't hit the ball right. You know, like, call it what it is. But again, that's why I'm sponsored. I love sponsoring women in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a privilege to work with other women. I mean, have everyone I've worked with stayed sober? No. And but the privilege is I get to stay sober. And I love sharing the journey of AA and sharing things like working on step 5 and 6 right now. I talked about 5 and 6, you know, or 6 and 7, excuse me, the defects of character. Again, look at me, 31 years and I'm lying about $30. What? I still got defects. I still have, it's still cunning, baffling, and powerful to me. My ism is very sneaky. And if I don't watch it, I could go back out quick. Like, don't think that I don't remember what my last drunk was like. I can remember it and feel it like it was yesterday. By the way, I have to say, shout out to South Bay Pioneers. I love this facility. I love what it stands for. I love the people it helps. It is an amazing spiritual, like, I can feel the spiritual presence of God here. And if you don't feel it, that's fine. I can feel it for you because it's extremely powerful to me. And I love, you know, you look through the books of names of the spirit, some of these spiritual giants that have led before us. And I'm truly grateful for them and blazing the way. And again, the women in AA who have taught me what I can be extremely stubborn. Because I think, you know, I keep thinking at some point, like at 20 years, I was really angry because I thought I should be better by now. I thought I should have this down. And, you know, the bottom line is I have to remember that I'm still growing. I still need to grow in AA. I still need to be teachable. And I'm never going to be done. I'm never going to be done. And, you know, I used to come in and I used to hear people talk about it 20 years. My life is all sunshine and rainbows. And I'm like, who are you? Like, I can't relate. Like, I'm sitting mired in sickness and I'm crazy in my head. And I'm like, who are these people? And I'm like, that's maybe probably not what they're told, because I still have a disease of perception. You know, I still can perceive things in an off way. Not as bad. I mean, that's the best part about AA. Like, the pendulum has swung back to kind of like, I'm okay right here. But when I get over here, things get wacky. Or if I get over here, things get wacky. So again, there's a reason. Like, Shelley, you know, my normal friend, why do you still go to meetings after 31 years? I'm like, I said, you don't know my head. My head tells me things still at 31 years. Like, I still, and I said, and I'm under no delusion or illusion that I can drink like other people. I mean, my roommate and I would walk. I mean, I would do anything to get what I needed. I mean, we would, Minneapolis, Sub-Zero, if y'all ever felt that, we would walk 2 miles to the liquor store for two cases of beer and two bottles of Bacardi, one for her, one for me. I had one case for me, one case for her. And I literally, I would do whatever it takes. So when people are like, why are you going here? Like, in Minneapolis, I drive to Blizzards in meetings to go to meetings. And they're like, why are you going? I'm like, do you know what I did for drinking? Like, I would do anything to get drunk. Anything. You know, today, I'm probably going to start wrapping it up, but, and you guys get 10 minutes of your life back. Aren't you happy? And you don't have to hear me next week either. So, you know, AA has given me a freedom. Like, I actually am okay in my own skin. You know, even in sobriety, sometimes I still get finicky in my own skin. And it's like, for the most part, though, I get to live a free life. Because, you know, does it mean I still have to work the steps? Yeah, I still have to do regular inventories. I still have to call my sponsor. I still need to be accountable. I go to meetings. Part of it is for me. Like, it's a selfish but selfless program, right? We have to give to get. And I love, but the gifts I get from giving are amazing. Just to share this journey with other people and have a real connection with other people. Because my connection with other people back in the day was like, hey, what do you got? What do you got? What do you have? Because what's mine's mine and what's yours is mine. That's how I roll. Okay. Whatever you got is mine and whatever I got's mine. I'm not into sharing. Thank you very much for playing. But I'm of service in all aspects of my life. You know, I try to be a good daughter today. I am not perfect with my father. Like, I am not. I get short-tempered with him. And, you know, we're learning how to live together, and it's not easy. He's a grumpy old man, grumpy. So, you know, I try and bring positivity into the equation. And if it gets too much for me, I get to come back and call my sponsor and have a little retreat. I get to come to AA, where you guys get to go, Shelley, your job is to be a good daughter, because you put him through hell for years. And I did. Because when you're, partying in an abandoned basement and all over downtown Minneapolis, and I mean, I did a lot of stupid stuff. I mean, I'm being nice with what I'm telling you guys. I'm lucky to be alive. I got into cars with strangers I had no business getting into. You know, I just did a lot of stupid things, and God does for me, has done for me what I can't do for myself. Is life going to get hard again in sobriety? Yeah, it will. But, you know, I still get sad. I still get angry about things. But my old sponsor said, you know what, Shelley? You have the human quality. You're not going to be perfect. It's the human quality. And I have to remember, I'm a human being. I have emotion about things. I may get mad about things. I probably still will lie again. Yes, it will happen. But I will get to make it right again, right? And so I have the human quality, and I have to remember that. But anyway, I'm going to wrap it up. But thank you guys for having me. I so appreciate you guys being here, and I hope you got something out of it. Thank you.
Thank you, Shelley. That was fantastic. Can we have another round of applause for Shelley? We hope you visit us another time real soon. Thank you. Thank you. We also like to thank the guys from the house for cooking a wonderful dinner, and the women's auxiliary for everything that they do. We can now circle up and close out with a prayer of Shelley's choice.